hips. The Hypsilophodont's green head hung down out of the sling, the tongue dangling, the eyes dull.
"Careful! Careful!"
Hammond shouted as the crane began to lift. Harding grunted and eased the head back onto the leather straps. He didn't want to impede circulation through the carotid artery. The crane hissed as it lifted the animal into the air onto the waiting flatbed truck. The Hypsy was a small dryosaur, 7 feet long, weighing about 500 pounds. She was dark green, with mottled brown spots. She was breathing slowly, but she seemed all right. Harding had shot her a few minutes before with a tranquilizer gun, and apparently he had guessed the correct dose. There was always a tense moment dosing these big animals. Too little, and they would run off into the forest, collapsing where you couldn't get to them. Too much, and they went into terminal cardiac arrest. This one had taken a single bounding leap and keeled over, perfectly dosed.
"Watch it! Easy!"
Hammond was shouting to the workman. "Mr. Hammond," Harding said, "please."
"Well, they should be careful."
"They are being careful," Harding said. He climbed up onto the back of the flatbed as the Hypsy came down, and he set her into the restraining harness. Harding slipped on the cardiogram collar that monitored heartbeat, then picked up the big electronic thermometer the size of a turkey baster and slipped it into the rectum. It beeped, 96.2 degrees.
"How is she?"
Hammond asked fretfully.
"She's fine," Harding said. "She's only dropped a degree and a half." "That's too much," Hammond said. "Too deep."
"You don't want her waking up and jumping off the truck," Harding snapped. Before coming to the park, Harding had been the chief of veterinary medicine at the San Diego Zoo, and the world's leading expert on avian care. He flew all over the world, consulting with zoos in Europe, India, and Japan on the care of exotic birds. He'd had no interest when this peculiar little man showed up, offering him a position in a private game park. But when he learned what Hammond had done, it was impossible to pass up. Harding had an academic bent, and the prospect of writing the first textbook of veterinary internal medicine, Diseases of Dinosauria, was compelling. In the late 20th century, veterinary medicine was scientifically advanced. The best zoos ran clinics little different from hospitals. New textbooks were merely refinements of old. For a world-class practitioner, there were no worlds left to conquer. But to be the first to care for a whole new class of animals, that was something. And Harding had never regretted his decision. He had developed considerable expertise with these animals, and he didn't want to hear from Hammond now. The Hypsy snorted and twitched. She was still breathing shallowly. There was no ocular reflex yet, but it was time to get moving.
"All aboard," Harding shouted. "Let's get this girl back to her paddock."
"Living systems," Arnold said, "are not like mechanical systems. Living systems are never in equilibrium. They are inherently unstable. They may seem stable, but they're not. Everything is moving and changing. In a sense, everything is on the edge of collapse." Dinara was frowning. "But lots of things don't change. Body temperature doesn't change. All kinds of other..."
"Body temperature changes constantly," Arnold said.
"Constantly. It changes cyclically over 24 hours, lowest in the morning, highest in the afternoon. It changes with mood, with disease, with exercise, with outside temperature, with food. It continuously fluctuates up and down, tiny jiggles on a graph, because at any moment some forces are pushing temperature up or other forces are pulling it down. It is inherently unstable, and every other aspect of living systems is like that too."